The successor to the U-2 was the Corona spy satellite. The first one was launched in 1960. Got more data about Soviet military installations than all the U-2 flights that had preceded it. And we kept launching them. They had a great system for getting the data back. Kodak developed some super cameras. And they'd record film, and then they'd de-orbit, and airplanes would come by and catch the film that was coming back in. That sounds weird as can be. This is out over the Pacific. But it worked. It worked. Now, did we pronounce that to the world? Hey, look what we did. We spied on the Soviet Union with a satellite that goes around and around and around. Nope. 1995. First successful one, 1960. 1995, before it was admitted. The National Reconnaissance Organization office, really, NRO, they build the big spy satellites. You know, the ones that can read the license plates in the Kremlin parking lots. Big organization. They admitted about 4 years ago that they had canceled a program they had with Boeing to develop a better spy satellite architecture, how they arranged the components. They'd only spent $13 billion, and they hadn't gotten what they wanted, so they canceled the program. All done in secret. Governments can't keep secrets? Who's kidding who? The radio astronomers, the astronomical community is kidding themselves. Then there's the Manhattan Project. That was what we set up to develop the atomic bomb. And it was done in secret. All kinds of money spent in all kinds of places, from Oak Ridge to Hanford to Los Alamos, a lot of other places. Spent several billion dollars. And many of the, well, Vice President Harry Truman had been a senator. Then he was elected to vice presidency in 1944. He knew nothing about the Manhattan Project as vice president. And it was only 13 days after President Roosevelt died in 1945 that Secretary of War Stimson had to brief President Truman about the Manhattan Project. As first senator and then vice president, he knew nothing about it. Secrets can be kept. And they often are being kept. So it's one of those stupid arguments because it's not based on data, evidence, checking through the files, doing your homework. You have to admit something you don't know if you go looking for new information, that there might be something you don't know. There's still a lot of nuclear secrets. The stealth aircraft, incidentally based upon some Russian scientific work on how signals reflect from different surfaces and stuff like that. Anyway, we spent $10 billion, Lockheed, to develop the stealth aircraft over 10 years in secret. Of course secrets can be kept. There's the Corona spy satellite. I would love to have been in an airplane watching as the canister, the data canister, came down from Corona and got netted by the passing airplane. Can you imagine what people would have thought if they saw that? I mean, this was out over the Pacific. Nobody saw it, I guess, but pretty neat. And I showed some of these before. Government documents about UFOs. Now, it took us a long time to get any of these. A group called Citizens Against UFO Secrecy went after the CIA back in the 80s. We want all your UFO documents. We don't have any. You do too. We do not. We appeal. They deny. We go to court. Judge says do a search under Freedom of Information. Okay, they came back. Oh, yeah, look, we found about 900 pages. Oh, and yeah, we found 56 documents that originated with other agencies. We can't release those. It's all about UFOs, you understand. Okay, they didn't release anything that was top secret. But amongst that list of 57 documents from other agencies were a bunch from the NSA, National Security Agency. So we filed a Freedom of Information Act request for those. Sorry, national security, sources and methods, we can't release anything, said the NSA. Their justification to a federal court judge was 18 pages long, about 80% blacked out, something like this document you see up there now. Well, after time goes by and President Clinton signed a new executive order requiring that all old classified information be declassified within 25 years. And everybody knew Clinton wasn't going to be reelected in 96, so the Air Force, the Army, the Navy did nothing about going through their old documents. You could keep it classified if you could justify it, but you had to sort and sift and throw out the stuff that shouldn't have been kept classified. Well, Clinton did get reelected, and then suddenly the Air Force is looking at 100,000 pages a month. And it turns out there was a lot of highly classified material. And finally, the NSA says, well, maybe we should release that old stuff. And I heard a rumor, so I called the NSA Freedom of Information Office. Understand you're putting out a lot of UFO documents. Well, yes, sir. Well, how do I get a copy? Well, what's your name, sir? My name is Stanton Friedman. Oh, we know about you. That worried me a bit. Oh, why is that? Well, Phil Klass, senior avionics editor for Aviation Week and Space Technology and one of the biggest debunkers of UFOs, called us and told us that you show those blacked out documents on television and you don't tell people that it's for sources and methods information that's keeping withheld. So we are putting out a new set, and I got a set of those documents. No blacked out material. It was all whited out. Honest. And you can read about three lines per page. And people said, why don't you scrape off the blackout on those CIA documents and the whiteout and see what's underneath? They Xerox it first. There's nothing underneath. So this is a typical CIA UFO document, top secret Umbra. You notice the words that are declassified. Title, doc reference, Soviet, USSR. Oh, that's highly classified, you know. Pretty silly stuff. And so let's look. I think the next one is an NSA. Yeah, that's a classified NSA UFO document, top secret Umbra. And everything's whited out except that little bit in the middle. And anybody who's got any sense knows that it can't be that 97% of this page is sources and methods and only 3% is material information. Can governments keep secrets? Of course they can. And the White House even responded falsely. They had a situation for a while where you could submit a petition if you got 25,000 names on it. You could request that they answer a certain question, and that was done for UFOs. No, we're not keeping anything secret about UFOs. What do you call that? I mean, I had people call me, Stan, NSA is releasing their UFO materials. I said, can you read what's under the whiteout? Well, no, but then they're not releasing it. You won't see this in the New York Times or the Washington Post, because we know the government can't keep secrets. It would be nice if any of you happens to have managed to get unredacted copies of these documents. These are all old ones, incidentally. All this stuff is pre-1980. A lot of years since then. NSA has lots of spy satellites. They've gathered lots of information. But they ain't telling us, and the New York Times isn't going after it. One of my favorite comments is by General Carol Bolander, Air Force General. He was an engineer, a good one, worked on the lunar excursion module, which we successfully launched in 1969. Well, in early 69, the University of Colorado study, Dr. Condon had recommended that Project Blue Book be closed because it wasn't contributing anything to science or intelligence. And I agree with that. It wasn't contributing much to anything. Anyway, the Air Force asked General Bolander, now that he wasn't working 12-hour days, as he put it to me when I talked to him 10 years later on the lunar excursion module, what should we do about Project Blue Book? Now, he came at it completely unbiased because he had nothing to do with it before this time. Okay, so he wrote a memo which caused the closure of Project Blue Book at the end of 1969. He said, reports of UFOs which could affect national security are not part of the Blue Book system. He said, they're made in accordance with JNAP 146, Joint Army Navy Air Force Publication 146, or Air Force Manual 55-11, and are not part of the Blue Book system. Two paragraphs later, he said, if we close Project Blue Book, the public won't have a place to report UFOs. However, as previously noted, reports which could affect national security, they're the ones I'm interested in, will continue to be made using the procedures adapted for that purpose. Well, I didn't say this until 10 years after it was written, and I managed to locate General Bolander and explain that I'd had a clearance for 14 years, very interested in UFOs, and was reading his memo. And I said, it sounds to me like you were saying that there were two separate channels for communications about UFOs. One dealing with the reports which could affect national security, and the other run-of-the-mill UFO stuff. He said, yes. And we talked about an example would be that a UFO going down the runway at a strategic air command base where nuclear weapons were stored, that would be a national security problem. It ain't supposed to be anything there. But if you and I just go outside here and look up at the sky and there's some UFOs going over, big deal, happens all the time. Mutual UFO Network is getting 600 reports a month. 600 a month. And most people don't report their sightings. And yet, if you write the Air Force about UFOs and the Air Force, oh, we're not doing anything about UFOs. No UFO report evaluated, examined, investigated by the United States Air Force gives any evidence of being a threat to the security of the United States. Of course, if one of those three functions was done by somebody else, it's still a true but totally meaningless statement. The official Air Force statement is also no evidence of technology beyond our knowledge. Well, I know how to get to the stars with fusion propulsion systems. It's not beyond our knowledge. We haven't accomplished it yet. We haven't spent the $20 billion it might cost to do it. So, keeping secrets? Yeah, we're still keeping secrets. Try to get unredacted versions of the NSA and CIA UFO documents. And then tell me that they're not keeping secrets. They are. I don't think those statements from General Bolander have appeared in any major newspaper. Look for radio signals. But anybody looking in depth in how technology has changed over the last, let's say, 120 years, let's say since 1900, because a lot of new stuff came into being place technology after 1900, it always comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. Every field you turn to. Today's computers aren't just more compact slide rules. Marconi, you want an interesting trip, go up to Newfoundland. It's a half hour ahead of us time-wise, where I live in New Brunswick. People find that strange, but half hour time zone up there, Newfoundland time. The first long-distance radio signal was sent by Marconi from England to Signal Hill in St. John's, Newfoundland. And there's a room there, a building, a sort of a museum. That was in 1901. And you know what? All the great scientists said, what are you, crazy? Don't you know that radio waves travel in straight lines? And incidentally, the Earth is round? So if you want to send a signal any distance on the earth, it only goes a couple hundred miles before it ain't near the ground no more, man. Mark Conley knew better than that. He sent signals and received at increasing distances. And the numbers you calculate by assuming the earth is round and this is a straight line don't hold. So he knew he was in pretty good territory when he sent those signals to Signal Hill. And it made a big difference, incidentally. A lot of lives were saved because they were sending radio signals from ships, Morse code mostly, to tell people that there has been a disaster, some kind of a wreck, some kind of an accident, some kind of terrible things. Get the troops here, so to speak. Get the Navy here. A lot of lives saved. And it turned out it was 20 years later before we figured out why radio worked over long distances. It was a layer of the ionosphere that reflected those radio waves. Wouldn't even know it was there. That's how smart we are. We discovered it by accident. Many great discoveries have been made by accident. But somebody willing to look again and say, oh, you know, I'm not sure that what's going on here. I'm not so smart that I know everything. Maybe I better check on this a little more. That's what led to great discoveries. So Marconi was a sharp guy. It wasn't just by accident that he was successful, though. He had done his homework. Now, to give an example of what I mean when I say progress comes from doing things differently, if you go back to 1523, one of Ferdinand Magellan's ships circumnavigated the globe, went all the way around Earth, and it took 3 years. Magellan didn't make it. That's why I say his ship, not him. 3 years. Jules Verne came up with Around the World in 80 Days in 1873. Well, that's quite an improvement. The International Space Station goes around every 90 minutes. So we go from 3 years to 90 minutes in less than 500 years. But not by using better sailboats. By using entirely new technology, a new approach. That's how progress gets done. So why are we stuck with listening for radio signals instead of looking at the UFO evidence? Because we don't want to know that aliens are visiting. It would upset the apple cart. Too bad, is what I say. Now, some of you may recognize that that's a slide rule on the left, part of one. And a modern calculator on the right. And as I think I mentioned this morning briefly, I was lecturing in Michigan at a college and found that nobody in the large classroom of students knew what a slide rule was. I used one when I worked in industry. How many of you have used a slide rule? Quite a few. Not the youngest amongst you, I might add. Sorry, no insult meant. I'm one of the older guys here, so. But it did its job. It was a fine instrument. But that little device on the right can do a heck of a lot more in a heck of a lot less time. And you don't need to be an expert at doing it. Just punch numbers in a little calculator. It's not that there was something wrong with the slide rule, but there's a better way of doing the same things and many more things. And I showed these nuclear rockets this morning. On the left, the Los Alamos one. On the right, the Westinghouse one. And there is one that Aerojet built, similar, same idea. The basic concept is to take advantage of the fact that a nuclear fission produces a heck of a lot more energy than a chemical reaction. And we've built these systems. It's not something we just talk about, not an exercise. The one on the left is the Phoebus. The biggest one was 4,400 megawatts, twice the power, as I said this morning, of Grand Coulee Dam. in something less than 8 feet in diameter. Think about that for a minute. The one on the right, only 1,100 megawatts, but I worked on that one. That's why I included it at Westinghouse. These were tested out at the nuclear test site, not far from Area 51. This goes over the whole question of how do you get to the stars and how do you do a lot of other things. Then I go back to this data from Blue Book Special Report 14. I've heard more nonsense about what the government studies have found about UFOs than about almost anything else. I showed you the quote this morning from Secretary of the Air Force. Even the unknown 3% in this study could have been identified as conventional phenomena or illusions if more complete observational data had been available. That was an official statement from the Secretary of the Air Force that got nationwide publicity, except it was a lie. The unknowns were 21.5%, which is a long way from 3%. And I like the psychological aberrations. No room for aberrations there. Yeah, there are crazy people in the world. And some of them probably claim to have seen UFOs. So what? There are plenty of non-crazy people who claim to have seen UFOs. That means a lot. Including pilots, scientists, even astronomers. So when anybody starts mouthing off about, there ain't no data, folks, they're not telling the truth. And the quality evaluation, the better the quality, the more likely to be unexplainable. Exactly what you'd expect if the unknowns are really different, and exactly the opposite of what the debunkers try to claim. There is good evidence. This is old data. We got plenty of new data. But you don't see it because it's classified. You don't have a need to know. They tell us. Now, here's what Carl Sagan said. The reliable cases are uninteresting, and the interesting cases are unreliable. Unfortunately, there are no cases that are both reliable and interesting. He gives no evidence for this, no reference, no basis. Look again. The better the quality, the more likely to be unidentifiable. They're the only interesting ones, after all. And as you'd expect, the less likely to be listed as insufficient information. Exactly what you'd expect if some of these things were really rather special. You'd never know it from the noisy negativists. To illustrate the problem, the most distinguished 19th century astronomer in the United States said, quote, "The demonstration that no possible combination of known substances, known forms of machinery, and known forms of force can be united in a practical machine by which man shall fly long distances through the air seems to this writer as complete as it is possible for the demonstration of any physical fact to be." How do you demonstrate a fact by saying there isn't any way to do it? Anyway, that statement was made 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight. And Dr. Newcomb was such a prominent astronomer, the President of the United States attended his funeral a few years later. It was baloney. That delicatessen is growing all day long here. Now, I mentioned nuclear fusion because I happen to like it as a way of doing things, like going to the stars. But the Navy has long since learned how to use nuclear fission. That's a nuclear-powered submarine on the left. It used to be that submarines were surface ships that could operate underwater for maybe a day. They needed oxygen for their diesel engines. The nuclear submarine allows them to stay underwater while going around the globe and taking periscope leave at Hawaii, I was told by one Navy guy. Now look at the right. That's a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. Carries 75 little airplanes. It operates for 20 years without refueling. That's a bit of an improvement over using tankers of diesel fuel. 20 years. And the airplanes operate for what? An hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? The analogous situation is a starship from another solar system to ours, operating on, say, nuclear fusion, which then releases Earth excursion modules, as I like to call them, which flit around in the atmosphere. Now, for that to be true, you'd have to have reports of huge motherships. Yeah, we do. Huge space carriers, if you will. Great case out in the Yukon. 32 witnesses interviewed by an engineer, civil engineer, Martin Jasek, all up and down the Yukon Highway. Well, let's see, with the front end over that mountain and the back end over that lake and that sort of thing, he wrote a paper. That craft was between 0.6 and 1.2 miles long. Miles long. Yet there was a recent paper just a few months ago by a debunker trying to say, look, the only way you can use nuclear fusion is to explode it inside some kind of a fusion rocket, and there's nothing that can contain that explosion. And he talked about the size of the vehicles up to 300 feet. Well, between 0.6 and 1.2 miles is a lot more than 300 feet. In addition, we have cases like the Japan Airlines case. 747 heading toward Fairbanks, Alaska, coming from Iceland. And they spotted this object. They saw it out the window. They picked it up on their radar. It was twice the size of an aircraft carrier, they said. They talked to the ground. What's going on up here? They picked up the 747. They picked up the unknown. The crew asked for permission to change their course so they could fly in a circle. They got permission. The UFO station kept with them. Being seen on the ground by radar, by the plane's radar, and visually by the crew. Twice the size of an aircraft carrier. All the paperwork on that, unfortunately, was collected by the FAA and sent to the CIA in Washington. You can't get copies of it. But the pilot had spoken. And one of the FAA guys has opened his mouth as well. Twice the size of an aircraft carrier puts it about 2,000 feet long. So, yes, we have motherships. Now, I'm not saying it has to be fusion in there. I know that the world of the future will tell us about stuff we don't know anything about now. That's the way things happen. But the debunkers don't seem to realize that. I'm curious what it took to get that equals MC squared times 40. get that painted on that ship. Now, another thing is, the SETI guys never talk about the way airplanes fly, you know, from city to city. They don't take off and say, where should we go now, guys? Is it random flights? Of course it isn't. Be a big waste of fuel. The reason I mention this is because you might want to look where stars have other stars close by.